Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey guys, this is episode 15 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, and we have a special guest today. His name is Jake McGee. You may know him as Budo Jake. He's one of the co-founders of BudoVideos.com. One of the reasons I'm so happy to have him on the show is I feel like Jake is a kindred spirit because he fully embraces the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. He's not just someone that trains. He has a jiu-jitsu-based business, and he's traveled extensively teaching and learning, and he's a lifer. He's fully embraced this lifestyle, and I respect that a lot. I respect even more the fact that he's made a success of his jiu-jitsu business. It's not an easy industry to do well in, and he's done incredibly well with Budo Videos. They've really helped raise the level of professionalism when it comes to the jiu-jitsu industry, and I'm so appreciative that he's taken time out of his incredibly busy schedule to chat to us. Before we get on with the episode, I'd just like to remind you guys of our sponsor. If you don't yet know about it, you can get 10% off any of the official Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood merchandise and training videos. If you head on over to store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com, you can find all our stuff. We've got what I consider to be some of the most amazing gi designs in the industry. We've got fantastic rash guards, cool belts. We've got, as I said, instructional materials. Just quality stuff that we put a lot of work into, and I know you're going to like. If you just use the code PODCAST, you'll get 10% off. So head on over to store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com. Okay, now it's time for episode 15 of the JJB Podcast with Budo Jake. Enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 15 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. This is the second time Jake and I have tried to do this. My guest is none other than the legendary Budo Jake McGee. First time we recorded it, we had an amazing conversation, and I went to send the files to the producer, and his side of the audio was just completely blank. It's not his fault, I fucked it up, but either way, it was super frustrating. And he's a super busy guy, and we've been trying to reconnect again to do the podcast again. And because of his schedule and my schedule, it's been a while since we've been able to make it happen. But finally, I have Jake with us again. Jake, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for the nice welcome, and no worries. It's always a good time talking to you.
For sure, bud. Now, Jake, I don't use that word lightly, but you are a legend in the industry. You're one of the few people I know who's made a fantastic living from jiu-jitsu, who hasn't opened a chain of gyms. And it's my understanding that it's because you and Budo Dave have been putting out a bunch of high quality content for almost 15 years now. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I have been fortunate to train and interview a lot of the world champions and best instructors in the world, and I feel very fortunate for that. And it's funny you mentioned that the topic of not opening a gym, because I've had lots of people ask me why I haven't, because usually if you're involved in jiu-jitsu for over a decade, you're usually on track to either be a full-time competitor or be a gym owner. But the main reason I didn't is I've seen a lot of my friends who moved up the ranks with me open up gyms and become, burnt out, essentially. Teaching beginners all the time tends to wear on a lot of people. And even though in the public, a lot of instructors will say they love what they do, any job, when you do it for a long time, tends to get old and tends to get predictable. So I've resisted that urge, but who knows? Maybe something.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that you have the best of both worlds, because you're within the industry, but you can kind of keep it at arm's length if you need to. Whereas the problem with being a full-time instructor, the one I've identified and the one that, if I'm honest, does scare me a little bit, is there's no taking a break from it, man. You run a gym, and at least for the first 5 years or so, you are going to be on that mat 6 days a week, 50 weeks a year, or 48 weeks a year. And I don't know if that's the recipe for continuing to enjoy jiu-jitsu. Do you think there's a way around this? And I'm asking because this is not even for the audience, for myself, because I'm considering opening my own location. I just as I said, I'm terrified of that burnout, which you spoke of.
Yeah, I think that if you're the main instructor in a school and you have that responsibility of being there on the mat 6 days a week for most of the hours of a day, I don't see how you can't get burnout. And I think that another problem is that you tend to view your training partners now as customers, and that's a different relationship. So I think the ones that have been able to make it work have been ones that have had other instructors that could teach other classes so they could get away and focus on their own training as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things I'm considering is that if it's myself and two other instructors, then between us sharing the load, you'll still be able to, like, if you're teaching three classes a week for 2 hours each time, that's not going to burn you out. I mean, that's the amount of time you'd spend training anyway. And then if you need to go away for a couple of months to teach seminars, and the other dudes can run it for you. And I guess that's the scenario, the ideal scenario. But the issue is you have to grow someone up to brown belt level, and they have to be loyal to you, which is, I'm starting to see, it's something pretty rare in the industry. Uh-huh. You know, like you could get a buddy who's already a high grade and get him to come work for you, but the probability is that he's just gonna leave and take all your students and start up down the road.
Right,
and that's the thing we've seen.
Right, so, and I've also seen a lot of schools become somewhat incestuous in the sense that they'll only train with their own guys and only have instructors with their own associations come over. And I was talking to a world champion just recently, and he said he likes to have guest instructors come in, you know, from varied backgrounds, different schools, different academies, come in and teach classes to really keep the creative juices flowing. And I think that's important to, as Dave Camarillo said, to train with everyone.
Man, you took the words out of my mouth. You know, I was teaching a seminar in Johannesburg recently, and I taught the seminar on a Saturday, and then I said to the coach or the owner of the academy, I said, look, I tell you what, he's got a small association. So I said, tomorrow you and I and your head coaches will all get together and just train a little bit. And he said, okay. And the next morning, Sunday, we got together. And I mean, the highest grade there was a brown belt, but I showed them some tricks, you know. I said, okay, cool guys, I think you might like this. But then I said to them, yeah, like I want to learn this thing that I know you guys are good at. Can you teach it to me? And they were like, they were just shocked. They were like, we can't believe that you're wanting to learn this stuff. Like, it's so humbling that you want to learn new things. And I was like, I mean, to me, that's not humbling at all. That's just, that's how it should be. If you're a growing, evolving human being / jiu-jitsu instructor / anything, you should be like an open system. You should be ready to take new stuff on board. Because if you hit that point, you're like, okay, I'm a black belt. That's it, I'm done. Fucking hell, bro. You're going to burn out on jiu-jitsu really quick, and you're not going to want to do it anymore.
Absolutely. And nobody knows everything. In fact, the world champions, oftentimes, a case could be argued that they know the least because they have to focus like a laser on just a core amount of techniques that they're going to get really good at. So they might not know the breadth of techniques that a Joe Blow black belt knows, but they know a few techniques super good. And of course, that's just a generalization, but something that I've observed.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some truth to that. So Jake, probably the question I should have opened up with is, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to start training in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, I was training a lot of different martial arts. It's been 30 years now of martial arts. I started in karate like a lot of kids did. Then I did Aikido for 20 years, and then been doing jiu-jitsu for the past 15. But it was just a matter of Carlos Gracie Jr. and Marcio Feitosa moved to Orange County, California, and opened up a school, and a few of my friends went there to train, and I thought, oh, I'll check it out. You know, I wasn't serious about starting anything new at that point. But man, you know, just being on the mats for a little while and seeing how much technique was there, and the fact that I couldn't just muscle it, made me think, man, I got to learn this stuff. And I'd already watched the UFC. I knew very well what it was about, but it was them being able to articulate it in a really detailed manner that made me think, yeah, this is, I'm going to stick with this. And whenever I get into things, I go real deep. So once I started it, I couldn't stop.
Yeah, and you basically walked away from Aikido, is that correct?
Yeah, I still stuck with it for a few more years because I had students and stuff. But after about 5 years, I said, you know what, I want to focus 100% on jiu-jitsu. So passed the school on and, moved on.
It's interesting to me, almost everyone around about our age, like 30s and 40s, all the jiu-jitsu guys have gone through the traditional martial arts route. You know, anyone I meet is, he's done karate or he did some kung fu or Shaolin or whatever the some of those crazy things were back in the day. And then he found jiu-jitsu and moved on to it. And I think it's actually a question for you. Do you think that that benefits the jiu-jitsu player ultimately, or do you think it's better to be like the new generation now who just grow up doing functional martial arts straight away and they've never really experienced those traditional martial arts?
I think everybody has to find their way. I don't think there's anything wrong with either approach, but I will say that I don't regret a day that I spent in Aikido. And even though I don't view Aikido as an effective martial art per se, I view it as a cultural explanation through classical fighting. But I still learned a lot, and it still directly applies to my jiu-jitsu. It's not so much physically, but somewhat energetically, if I can say that, and also just attitude and posture and breathing. Those are all core components of any movement system that I don't think are very well taught in jiu-jitsu, namely breathing. But you know, you can get that through yoga as well, and certainly, you know, someone like Hicks and Gracie got his through yoga. I think you, if you really want to get good at jiu-jitsu, you do have to explore those somewhat metaphysical approaches as well.
Yeah, like different movement systems and different, you just got to branch out. I totally agree with you. You know what amazes me? Sometimes I'll teach a seminar and I'll start talking to you guys about what something that I consider to be incredibly simple that's not related to jiu-jitsu technique. The thing I'm working with a lot at the moment is the strength of the feet and how it's important to be able to really engage the mat with your feet. And I'll explain how, you know, modern footwear like really like it pinches and cramps your feet, and it leads to lack of range of motion, which leads to weak feet, which means you can't engage with the mat. And this is stuff I didn't need jiu-jitsu to teach me. This is stuff that like I learned from yoga or just walking on the beach or, you know, doing calisthenics or like any stuff that I do outside off the mat activities. And some people, they just like, it amazes me that they think all they have to do is come to class and learn the techniques, and that's going to make them this ninja. And it's just not the case, man. It's not the case. Like, all the best guys, like, they're all working with weights, or they're doing yoga, or they're doing weights and yoga, or they're doing rock climbing, or they're doing some combination of, like, beyond the mat activities. And I think it plays into what you said. Aikido could be considered one of those. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you just go into the mat for 2 hours a day doing jiu-jitsu, a couple of days a week, I mean, you're really not focusing too much. There's so much that you can do in your daily life to improve your effective body movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jake, you've been around since back in the day. Like, how long has it been since you've been training jiu-jitsu? I'm sorry, I
started around 2004.
Okay, yeah, so it's been a while, right? Like, it's a little bit selfish of me, but sometimes I think, you know, it's around 2004 is when I started focusing on jiu-jitsu as well. And I think it's just human nature, but I always think to myself, it was so much cooler back then when fewer people knew about it. You know, it was a little bit more underground, and like there's a more tight-knit community, and it's definitely changed. And I'm starting to realize that's really not good thinking that I'm doing. I think I need to be much more progressive than that. And so I wanted to ask you, what positive changes have you seen in jiu-jitsu since back in the day when you started getting involved in the art?
Well, I would say the biggest thing is just the access to information is just immense. Before, we had to pay dearly to learn the techniques. You know, back when I started, it was still VHS tapes mostly from Panther Productions, and you'd get eight tapes from some guy from Brazil that you might not even know who he was, and that's, you would take those as gospel and you'd follow along. Nowadays, there's so much techniques out there, and I think, you know, a lot of the higher, I would say, open-minded guys realize that we don't only need to study from the world champions. There's a lot we can learn from everybody, because jiu-jitsu is this open source a style where there's who knows who can come up with something that will inspire you to try new things.
Yeah, I agree with you. So what negative things have you seen happen since those earlier days? With
I
regards
don't
to
view it as
jiu-jitsu.
negative, but I can see the point that some people would say that there's become a further divide of in jiu-jitsu in terms of street fighting, Vale Tudo versus the sport side of things, and I can understand why a lot of the old school guys look at things like inversions and barambolos as not street effective and a watering down of the sport and things like that. But I think it's fine. If you look back at swordsmanship in Japan, for example, some guys practice with real swords, and there's other guys who practice with bamboo swords, kendo and kenjutsu. And the guys that practice with the real swords might criticize the guys with the bamboo, saying, "You're just playing tag. You're just tapping each other on the head, whereas you're not really practicing cutting through the body." And that's what a sword is all about. So I see the same argument in the sword arts as you do in jiu-jitsu. The Vale Tudo guys say jiu-jitsu should always think about striking, and if you're on your back spinning upside down, you're going to get beat up in a fight. At the end of the day, I think it's important to enjoy the training, and if you enjoy the sport side of things, you're getting healthier, you're getting stronger, you are learning how to fight, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
I agree with you, and it just blows my mind. These dudes are like so obsessed about street fighting. I think I spoke about this on your show. It's like, who are these dudes that are getting into all these street fights? It's the weirdest thing. I can understand if you're a bouncer or if you're in law enforcement, and then you need to know these super specific scenarios in which you need to restrain someone, or but in all other scenarios in which jiu-jitsu could help you, a blue belt's enough. Like, being a decent blue belt's going to be enough. Like, a blue belt against an average human being in a physical confrontation that doesn't include weapons and that doesn't include multiple opponents, a blue belt's going to be more than enough. I mean, so I don't know. I think it's a lot of it's marketing hype, and
Yeah,
yeah, I
if
kind of
we're
just
honest about it,
it,
oftentimes they're just playing on the fears of the students.
for sure. I think I've mentioned this on another show, but a good friend of mine, he's a smart dude. He said, "Look, if you want to test your jiu-jitsu, right? If you really want to be serious about how hardcore your jiu-jitsu is in a fight, go down to South Central LA and cause an issue with some of the Bloods or the Crips, and you'll see very quickly how street effective your system is." And that always made me laugh, you know. Jake, I want to come back to your time in Japan. It seems, I mean, just by the name you've taken, Budo Jake, like Budo is a Japanese word. And there's also, you guys use in your logo the Enso circle, if I'm not mistaken. So it's obvious that you guys are very influenced, and you in particular are influenced by the time you spent in Japan. Can you tell me a little bit about that time you spent living there, what you enjoyed about it, what you didn't enjoy about it, and why you came home?
Yeah, I did a homestay there when I was a high school student, and I knew I wanted to go back. So after I graduated college, I moved back and stayed there for 3 years, practicing martial arts, learning the language, eating amazing food, traveling all over the country. And yeah, I had a wonderful time, and I would recommend anybody to go there. And for anybody who wants to travel, living abroad is totally different than traveling abroad. Traveling is very superficial. Living, you get to go much deeper and have a much more profound understanding of the culture. So I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. And as far as any negative aspects, I really can't think of one. I think immersion is the best way to learn another language. If you're open-minded to it, you can learn so much. And just hanging out with a couple of Japanese guys on the mat last night, and we're talking and training in Japanese, and it's just, oh man, I've made so many wonderful friendships and everything. So you ask about any
That's
negatives,
cool.
there's really none. Yeah.
What were you were teaching English there, or what were you
Yep.
doing specifically?
Yep. I was teaching
Okay.
English to pay the bills during the day and training at night.
And then you decided to come back and open or start Budo videos after you returned from Japan.
Yes, that's right. The nice thing about teaching English in Japan is it's pretty easy. Anybody with a college degree can do it, and it's a conversation school. They learn English from elementary school, so you're not really teaching too much. It's more just getting paid to talk to people. So it's a great way to get comfortable speaking in front of crowds as well. So I enjoyed that a lot. But as far as why I came back, there is a salary ceiling that you hit, and it does get old after a while.
So you came back and you thought to yourself, there's a lack of quality content for martial artists online. And you started Buddha videos. Is that pretty much what happened?
Yep, pretty much. And then I started going around training with different guys, and people would always ask me, my teammates at Gracie Baja would ask me, like, oh, where did you go and what did you learn? And I started showing them, and I thought, you know what, I'm getting tired of having to show so many different people what I did last week or whenever the time may be. So I thought, next time I'll just bring a camera with me. So that's what we did, brought a film crew and started filming it. And you know, I was going around training with world champions, so I'm usually getting my ass kicked each time, but that's fine. And so we did that for a few years.
That was how quickly did it take off? Like how quickly did your business start to grow?
Yeah, it did take off pretty quickly. And at that time, we were training with a lot of the guys from IBJJF, so we started doing live events for a lot of the for the world championships and all that. So it got pretty crazy. And back then, you know, around 2005, for those of you that were in the industry at that time, jiu-jitsu and MMA in particular really took off. The Ultimate Fighter came on TV around that time, and MMA just exploded. So the scene changed a lot in that time. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you, as I said earlier, you're one of the few guys, it seems to me, who's made a decent living, who doesn't own a chain of schools. And what advice would you give to someone listening now who wanted to get started or wanted to start a business within the jiu-jitsu industry? Is there anything specific you'd tell them? Anything you'd warn them about?
Yeah, you know, this industry has changed a lot, and there is a lot more competition now. So it is pretty risky to get into it at this point. But I would say that if you want to get something started, keep it small and just like a little snowball, just keep pushing that ball and making it a little bit bigger and bigger. If you just dump a ton of money into it, which I've seen people do, that's a pretty sure recipe for failure, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess it could be argued that's a pretty sure recipe for failure in all businesses. talk me through your average day's routine, because again, it seems to me that you really have achieved the ultimate lifestyle for a jiu-jitsu guy. You have a successful jiu-jitsu-based business. You are a black belt. You've won the American Nationals in the seniors division, if I'm not mistaken. You've pretty much got everything that an aspiring young jiu-jitsu guy would like to have when he reaches your advanced age. Just kidding. So just talk us through your usual day, if you don't mind.
Yeah, nowadays I wouldn't say step back from jiu-jitsu, but I'm doing it less than before. I used to do it every day. Now I'm just dropping in at friends' academies, teaching a class here and there. Last night I was at Victory MMA in San Diego and taught a class for Jeff Glover. And so I enjoy going out, seeing people, teaching classes or seminars. And I've also gotten really big into yoga and acro yoga. I find that's the perfect way to stay strong and healthy and really helps me avoid the odd and awkward jiu-jitsu injuries that are possible and something as chaotic as jiu-jitsu. So I'm doing yoga every day and you know, still making new instructionals on topics with instructors that I want to see.
That's cool. You know, yoga is something I go on about it so often, but the best way I can describe what yoga does for me is that it's like if I go to an intense jiu-jitsu session, it's almost like I need a couple of hours of yoga just to put myself back together again. Mm-hmm. If you follow what I'm saying, especially in your late 30s and on, I find, and I'm sure the slightly older guys listening will agree with me. When I was younger, I could just train at pretty much as much as I wanted to. And sometimes I get sore. Sometimes I'd feel a little bit tired and then I'd take a day or two extra rest. But I could basically do as many sessions in a week as I wanted to. Sometimes it would be like 10 or 12 sessions in a week. And now one hard session with like five or six tough rolls at the end of the class, it's if I do not do yoga, I will not be able to walk properly for 2 or 3 days. I'll get out of bed in the morning with like my lower back tight, like hunched over like an old person. And the only way to solve this, I think, is a dedicated yoga and stretching program. Would you agree that that's been your experience?
Yes. And you know, I started yoga about 7 years ago, and it was really off and on, and I didn't see too many benefits. But about 2 years ago, I said, you know what, I'm just going to commit to this. I'm going to do it as much as possible, as probably once a day, for a year. And after a year, I'll reevaluate it and decide if I want to continue with that. And it was an easy decision after the first year. I said, you know what, it's so clear how beneficial this is. And I used to have to go to get a massage or go to the chiropractor once a month. Now I never feel the need for any of that stuff, just daily yoga.
Yeah. So when you say daily yoga, is any specific type of style that you're doing or?
Yeah, the two styles that I do are vinyasa, which is a little more movement. There's quite a bit of movements, a lot of advanced poses like headstands and handstands and all that kind of stuff. And then yin yoga, which is a much slower paced where you hold the pose for 3 to 5 minutes. I actually did my teacher training in that earlier this year, and that's really good for getting some deep stretches.
Oh, yeah. Did you do the 200-hour level course?
For the yin yoga, it's like a supplementary thing. I didn't do the 200 hours, but the yin yoga was just over 3 days.
And I think that's one of the traps people can fall into, jiu-jitsu guys especially, is they're doing this hardcore, intense, dynamic form of physical exercise, jiu-jitsu, and then they hear, I should do yoga. So they head off to a yoga class and they sign up for something like a power flow or vinyasa or an ashtanga class, which is in itself a pretty fucking intense physical workout.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then they wonder why it doesn't give them the benefits that they're seeking when they should be doing something like a much gentler, more therapeutic, rejuvenative form of yoga, like yin yoga. And they should just be doing long, gentle stretches. But I guess it's our mindset, like the fighters or martial artists' mindset is, you know, if it's not making me sweat and feel like I want to puke or incredibly uncomfortable, then it's not real exercise. Would you agree?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It takes a while to get over that. So Jake, my man, another thing I wanted to ask you about is, I've asked you this question before, you had to answer it two times now, and once in real life and then once in the previous the failed podcast that we did a couple of weeks ago, but you've trained with all these world champions. In fact, I would say that you've probably trained with more world champions and high level guys than anyone I know. By nature of your business and what you've been doing, who's the best guy you've ever trained with, and or the best three guys you've ever trained with, and why?
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly what best means, because if it's the number of taps in a round or if it's the how little I can move, there's a lot of different ways to quantify that. But how I determine best is the guys who are using the least amount of pressure and just this awesome body mechanics and finding the openings and getting the submission on their first attempt, you know, not struggling and transitioning, things like that. And so for me, probably the best guy that I've rolled with was Kai Otero. I could feel the strength difference. I'm much stronger than he is, but he is so precise in his movements and so technical. That was just an awesome experience, and I've learned a lot from him. So he's not the most patient guy in his teachings, because he has very high standards of where he expects you to be. So I've been on the receiving end of him, you know, telling me like, why can't you figure this out, you know? But he is a master of his craft, and sometimes there's one sweep, for example, that I learned from him, and he got frustrated that I couldn't get it on the first time, but I kept working on it and working on it and working on it, and a couple months later it became my number one sweep, and I'll use it all the time now. So Kai Otero would be the first one. And
that's awesome. I'm always reminded of you once said to me when I asked you this question and when I met you for the first time in person, you said one of the guys impressed you the most was
Cobrinha.
Cobrinha, yeah, you said, because he's like Night Stalker from the X-Men movies. It's like he just disappears and reappears on your back, like he's teleporting.
Nightcrawler. Yeah.
Nightcrawler, sorry. And that made a big impression on me. I always think about that, and like how that to me is the highest level of jiu-jitsu that you can attain, is when I think the Japanese speak about it in judo, they call it empty jacket grappling, where it feels like you're fighting with an empty jacket. Like as you go to throw the guy, he's somewhere else.
Right.
And I reckon that, I mean, I don't know if it's attainable for someone who's like 230 pounds like myself, but I would like to get to that level.
Right. Right. But yeah, even though I just named Kyle, I learned something, little details from every guy that I've rolled with, all the ones that were on the show rolled up, and I really treasure those memories for sure.
That's cool. And you've paid it forwards, because to this day, I still use and teach, I've now decided to call it the Hail Mary, which is that super sneaky side mount escape of yours, in which you get the guy in a Americana with your legs.
Yep.
I still use it every time I'm on the mat. And when I show dudes, like I just showed these dudes up in Johannesburg recently, and it absolutely blew their minds. In fact, I got a phone call from one of them earlier today. The guy was like, "Oh my God, I just used that Hail Mary thing you taught me. It was amazing." I tapped the guy out and made my whole week. And I just thought that was kind of cool the way that the knowledge gets transmitted on like that. That's one of the things I love about Jiu-Jitsu.
That's cool. And one thing that I love about it is that you never know who's going to show you something that can open up a whole door, not just to one technique, but to a lot. So one thing that I've been working on recently was something that I call the reverse Kimura. And I just created a whole system of 20 different moves from it. And that instruction will be coming out probably next month or so. But it's something that I learned a piece of from a guy named Barata, and just opened my mind to a bunch of other stuff.
Is this the Barata Plata?
Yes, it's the beginning move of the Barata Plata. But that's cool. Nobody uses it for other techniques.
It's weird. That technique, I was in Thailand and I was training with this Hungarian black belt, and he put me in that Barata Plata from his clothes guard, if I'm not mistaken. And I was just like, what the fuck is this? I've been training for like almost 20 years and I've never seen this. Mm-hmm. I said to him, what is this thing you keep getting me with? And he was like, oh yeah, it's Barata Plata. He said in this thick accent. Mm-hmm. And then it got me started on it. It made me, it's one of those times that it was just reinforced to me just how infinite Jiu-Jitsu actually is.
Yeah, that's right.
Jake, my man, it's so cool of you to share your knowledge and your wisdom and your experiences. You're one of the true professionals in the industry, and someone I admire very much. And I don't take for granted that you're willing to come on a show like this and just chat to everyone. It's very cool of you. If the audience wants to learn more about your business and what you do, where should they go?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram. That's Budo Jake. Also on Twitter. And if you can visit the website, budovideos.com, you'll see all kinds of cool instructionals and gear. And our instructionals are not only on DVD, but also on demand and also in the Apple App Store. So thank you guys for checking it out. And thanks for having me on, Nick. I look forward to being on the mat with you next time you're in SoCal.
For sure, my brother. Thanks again, Jake.
All right. Talk to you soon.
So the thing that strikes me about Jake is that he is still learning and growing. This is a common theme that I see in all the best people I meet in the Jiu-Jitsu community, is that they don't stop learning. They carry on looking to grow and expand. And Jake's an example of that. I mean, the guy's been doing martial arts for well over 30 years or approaching 30 years. And Jiu-Jitsu, for a large portion of that, is a high-level black belt. He knows more stuff than most people have forgotten during their Jiu-Jitsu careers. And yet he's still keen to learn. He's still doing things like yoga. He's still traveling to different academies to pick up new techniques and new insight. And I really respect and admire that. And I think it's really the way forwards if you want to become the most actualized, fulfilled Jiu-Jitsu person or martial artist you can be. So I thoroughly enjoyed that, Jake. Thank you so much for that. The next episode is going to be a big one. It is an ayahuasca themed episode. I am heading up into a nature reserve in the middle of South Africa, 3 hours outside my home city, with three buddies. One of them is a Jiu-Jitsu black belt and also what I consider to be a black belt level shaman. And we're going to be drinking ayahuasca, and the next day I'm going to do a podcast with him. I think he's going to have some really cool stuff to speak about. So we're going to have an interesting conversation. So get your mind ready for the next episode, the ayahuasca themed episode. Until then, guys, I'll catch you on the flip.